Chapter 5, The Congressional Black Caucus. If pigs could vote, the man with the slop bucket would be elected swineherd every time, no matter how much slaughtering he did on the side. Orson Scott Card. The Congressional Black Caucus, oops, I meant caucus, is the legislative arm of the RGI and represents roughly 10% of the House of Representatives and about a fifth of the Democratic minority. Established in 1970, the Congressional Black Caucus, CBC, calls itself the Conscience of Congress. Today, the Conscience of Congress does nothing more than beat victimology into Congress's head until Congress becomes unconscious. Originally founded in 1969 as a Democratic Select Committee by a group of black members of the House of Representatives, the organization was renamed as the CBC in 1971. Although the CBC is officially nonpartisan, it's a Democrat stronghold. Correction, black Democrat stronghold. When white liberal congressman Steve Cohen pledged to a 60% black district in Tennessee that he'd apply for CBC membership, the CBC made it crystal clear that membership entrance was based on pigmentation, not applications. While the bylaws of the caucus do not make race a prerequisite for membership, the consensus of the caucus is that it should remain exclusively black. Even though Representative Cohen introduced and championed House Resolution 194, which apologized for, quote, the enslavement and racial segregation of African Americans, end quote, the CBC only saw color and not his commitment to people of color. Mr. Cohen asked for admission and he got his answer. It's time to move on, said Representative William Lacey Clay Jr., Democrat, Missouri, son of Representative William Lacey Clay Sr., Democrat, Missouri, a co-founder of the caucus. Quote, it's an unwritten rule. It's understood. It's clear. End quote. Representative William Lacey Clay Jr. Steve Cohen wasn't the first white Democrat denied membership. Politico.com reported that Representative Pete Stark, Democrat, California, tried in 1975 when he was a sophomore representative and the group was only 6 years old. Half of my Democratic constituents were African American. I felt we had interests in common as far as helping people in poverty, Stark said. They had a vote and I lost. They said the issue was that I was white, and they felt it was important that the group be limited to African Americans. For a group that touts itself as being passionate fighters for black interests, they're apparently more passionate about fighting for a separate existence. Black votes matter. As the top-ranking black politicians in America, CBC members truly understand that black votes matter. Black voters count, and they can make the difference. I want them to know that, said former CBC head Representative Emmanuel Cleaver, Democrat from Missouri, in reference to the CBC's voter protection tour that featured free concerts for his voting bloc. The guaranteed method to secure the black vote is through black identity politics. The black identity politics, practiced by the CBC and many other black politicians, licensed them to campaign on the concept that black leadership will translate into black political power, and the acquired political power will be used to properly address black issues neglected under white leadership. Ultimately, black identity politics perpetuate an us versus them mindset that complements the victim mentality present amongst its constituency. In Houston, black identity politics even allowed a white conservative Republican running in an overwhelmingly black Democrat district to unseat a 24-year black incumbent on the Houston Community College Board of Trustees. The Houston Community College Board is composed of 9 members elected from single-member districts and serves 6-year terms. Dave Wilson, a white small business owner who knew that winning the second district seat was a long shot, told KHOU.com that he printed direct mail pieces that strongly implied he was black. His flyers were decorated with photographs of smiling African-American faces, which he readily admits he simply lifted off websites. and captioned with the words, quote, "Please vote for our friend and neighbor, Dave Wilson," end quote. The campaign was successful. Bruce Austin, the black incumbent who was unseated by assumed black man Dave Wilson, called Davis's campaign deceitful. "He never put out to voters that he was white," Austin said. "The problem is his picture was not in the League of Voters pamphlet or anywhere. This is one of the few times a white guy has pretended to be a black guy and fooled black people." Black identity politics also prevent the CBC from criticizing President Obama. The appearance of racial solidarity trumps all racial dilemmas. Congressman Maxine Waters, Democrat from California, once confessed as much to a Detroit crowd. Quote, "We don't put pressure on the president. Let me tell you why. We don't put pressure on the president because y'all love the president. You love the president. You're very proud to have a black man in the White House. First time in the history of the United States of America. If we go after the president too hard, you're going after us," end quote. Her colleague, Representative Emanuel Cleaver, a Democrat from Missouri, echoed her sentiment. While discussing the abysmal unemployment numbers in the black community with Root.com, Representative Cleaver was asked if the black community gives President Obama a pass because he's black. Cleaver confirmed what anyone with at least one functioning eye could see. Quote, "Look, as the chair of the Black Caucus, I've got to tell you, we are always hesitant to criticize the president. With 14% black unemployment, if we had a white president, we'd be marching around the White House," end quote. In the rare occurrence that voters break ranks and question the CBC's agenda, the CBC will step out of its bubble to place the sheep back into formation. Such was the case at a 2014 CBC town hall meeting. Representative Marsha Fudge, Democrat from Ohio, chided the electorate for demanding more accountability from the CBC. Quote, "I hope you will spend this much time with your local elected officials. I guarantee you, most people in this room have not done that. With your school board, with your city council, and so then you won't be calling me talking about somebody didn't come and pick up your trash. You need to call your city council person for that. And I say it that way because I need you to understand we all have a role to play and the Congressional Black Caucus cannot do it all by ourselves. Everybody has to do their part. The Black Caucus fights for you every day, even when you won't fight for yourself. We fight for you. Whether it's immigration or education, whether it's food stamps or housing, we fight for you every day. So my message to you is to contain your complaining," end quote. In other words, we fight to put food stamps in your pocket and subsidize roofs over your heads. So shut up and keep blindly voting for us. Because majority black cities are more concerned with being bastions of black political power instead of models for economic growth and prosperity, they've instead become models of mayhem and dysfunction. At a 2002 NAACP conference, Philadelphia Mayor John Street, who would eventually serve two mayoral terms, boasted about the opportunities he'd given to blacks, how he hired a black police commissioner, a black fire commissioner, a black finance director, a black treasurer. "The brothers and sisters are running the city," he proclaimed. "Running it. Don't let nobody fool you. We are in charge of the city of brotherly love." Among the 10 largest cities, Philadelphia has the highest deep poverty rate. Walter E. Williams, an esteemed economist and George Mason University professor, addressed the pitfall of black identity politics. Quote, "Let's look at some of the strategies since the beginning of the civil rights movement. The black power movement of the 60s and 70s held that black underrepresentation in the political arena was a major problem. It was argued that the election of more black officials as congressmen, mayors, and city council members would mean economic power, better neighborhoods, and better schools. 43 years ago, there were roughly 1,500 black elected officials nationwide. According to the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, by 2011, there were roughly 10,500 black elected officials, including a black president. But what were the fruits? By most any measure, the problems are worse. There is the greatest black poverty, poorest education, highest crime, and greatest family instability in cities such as Detroit, St. Louis, Oakland, California, Memphis, Tennessee, Birmingham, Alabama, Atlanta, Baltimore, Cleveland, Philadelphia, and Buffalo, New York. The most common characteristic of these predominantly black cities is that, for decades, all of them have been run by Democratic and presumably liberal administrations. What's more is that in most of these cities, blacks have been mayors, chief of police, school superintendents, and principals, and have dominated city councils. Political power has not lived up to its billing. End quote. Ignoring urban terrorism. Part of the CBC's self-described goal is, quote, positively influencing the course of events pertinent to African Americans, end quote. If the CBC's goal of positively influencing the course of events pertinent to African Americans were legitimate, then addressing the high crime rates in many of its members' heavily black areas would be the utmost priority. The CBC has 19 different task forces, but none for the most pressing issue affecting black communities, urban terrorism. You have the African Task Force, Budget Appropriation and Taxation Task Force, Civil Rights and Judiciary Task Force, Diversity Task Force, Economic Development and Wealth Creation Task Force, Education and Labor Task Force, Education Reform Working Group, Energy, Environment and Agriculture Task Force, Foreign Affairs and National Security Task Force, Healthcare Reform Implementation Working Group, Healthcare Task Force, Immigration Reform Task Force, Judicial Nominations Working Group, Justice System Reform Working Group, Poverty and the Economy Task Force, Prison Telecom Reform Working Group, Technology and Infrastructure Development, Voter Protection and Empowerment Working Group. Like clockwork, urban terrorism has ensured that black cities typically possess the highest crime rates in America compared to other communities of all sizes, from the smallest towns to the largest cities. Yet, even with statistical evidence, most black legislators lack the fortitude and or desire to address this unflattering reality. Many cities within the CBC members' districts are quintessential representations of black urban dysfunction and mainstays on the disgraceful list of America's most dangerous cities. Honestly, the CBC's apathy isn't surprising. After all, black thugs aren't criticized for the same reason President Obama isn't criticized: black identity politics. Skin folk are kin folk, except black conservatives. Furthermore, there's no political capital to be gained from addressing black interracial genocide, unless Woolly Lynch, racism, post-traumatic slavery disorder, PTSD, or guns can be blamed. As a result, many of their districts will remain awash with urban terrorism and designated as no-go zones. In 2015, Milwaukee, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., New Orleans, and Kansas City saw their murder rate increase double digits. Cleveland and Columbus, Ohio. Representative Marsha L. Fudge's 11th Congressional District is 54% black and includes majority black populated Cleveland, 53%, which Forbes magazine listed as America's 8th most dangerous city in 2015, with populations above 200,000. Cleveland ranked 23rd on NeighborhoodScout.com's list of America's most dangerous cities, with populations over 25,000. With this crime index ranking of 2 out of 100, 100 being the safest, Cleveland is only safer than 2% of American cities. And within Ohio, more than 99% of the communities have a lower crime rate than Cleveland. One's chances of becoming a victim of either violent or property crime are 1 in 15. Four of the top 100 worst performing public schools in the U.S. are in Cleveland, including one named after George Washington Carver. During the first 9 months of 2015, Cleveland saw a 40% increase in homicides and a 33% rise in felonious assault shootings compared to the same period in 2014. Five children under the age of 17 were shot over the 4th of July holiday weekend, and a four-week span in autumn produced three children whose combined ages only equal 8.5 years, shot and killed from drive-by shooting. A witness to the murder of 3-year-old Major Howard told NewsNet5.com that gunshots were, quote, normal in his neighborhood. It's Cleveland, he elaborated. You're going to hear a lot of gunshots, but to see a little boy get hit or a female get hit, that's just different. So, what is Representative Fudge's strategy to counter the harsh violence that occurs year after year in her district? Well, she decided to use her floor speech at the House of Representatives to disparage the police shootings of black males and cite the shootings as symptoms of America's pervasive racism. The fact that our country, the greatest country in the world, remains mired in race relation issues in the year 2014 is an embarrassment, decried Fudge. Representative Joyce Beatty's 3rd Congressional District is 32% black and includes most of 28% black Columbus, which faces the same bloody issues as its larger Cleveland sibling. In Columbus, one's chances of becoming a victim of either violent or property crime there are 1 in 20, and with the crime index ranking of 7 out of 100, 100 being the safest, Columbus is only safer than 7% of American cities. Within Ohio, more than 95% of the communities have a lower crime rate than Columbus. Columbus's 2016 began with 5 homicides in its first week. In 2015, blacks accounted for most of Columbus's homicide victims and perpetrators, and 2 of Columbus's 20 police precincts bore the brunt of 2015's 99 homicides. Approximately 30% of the city's homicides occurred in precincts that make up only 7% of its population. Columbus's police department was concerned about the city's climbing murder rate, especially among those under 30 years old. In 2014, black males overwhelmingly made up the largest group of the town's 89 homicides. Many of the victims were under 30 years old. The trend hasn't changed. So, who's responsible for Black Lives Not Mattering in Cleveland and Columbus? The answer won't shock Representatives Fudge and Beatty. They already know that it is black males. But their hypocritical oath and black identity politics prevent honesty. St. Louis and Kansas City, Missouri. Representative William Lacey Clay's 1st Congressional District includes the majority black city of St. Louis, 49%, which Forbes magazine recognized as America's 4th most dangerous city in 2015 with populations over 200,000. NeighborhoodScout.com ranked St. Louis 3rd on its 2016 list of top 30 U.S. cities with the highest murder rate, with 25,000 or more people, and 12th on its 2016 list of 100 most dangerous cities in America with 25,000 or more people. Moreover, its crime index ranking is 1 out of 100. 100 is the safest, meaning St. Louis is safer than only 1% of American cities. One's chances of becoming a victim of either violent or property crime there are 1 in 12. Within Missouri, more than 98% of the communities have a lower crime rate than St. Louis. St. Louis's 2014 concluded with 159 homicides, leaving the city with a murder rate of 50 per 100,000 residents, the worst in the nation for larger cities. 95% of defendants in 2014 were black and 91% were male. 55% were 25 and under. Furthermore, from January 2014 through August 2015, 90% of murder victims were black, 85% were male, and 48% were aged 25 and under. Its 2015 homicide count was 188, a significant increase for a city that already had a high homicide rate a year prior, making 2015 St. Louis's deadliest year in 2 decades. A Riverfront Times analysis of police data revealed a familiar pattern to inner-city police. The homicides are clustered. Since 2008, about 80% of homicides have occurred in just a third of St. Louis's neighborhoods. Richard Rosenfeld, a criminologist at the University of Missouri St. Louis, who regularly consults with city police, was surprised when he crunched the numbers from 2000 through 2014, according to the article. He found that half of St. Louis's violent crime was concentrated on just 5% of city blocks. My bet is that one of those blocks included North Newstead Avenue / Colt Berlante Avenue, which NeighborhoodScout.com listed as the 14th most dangerous American neighborhood in 2015. After Marcus Johnson Jr., a 6-year-old heart patient, was shot and killed over a traffic dispute, a St. Louis police officer posted a vivid account of his encounter with the critically wounded kid at Children's Hospital. The sympathetic officer wrote, quote, "We arrived at the Children's Hospital emergency room at the same time. He and his partner parked, and I pulled up to their left and did the same. I got out of my car and watched as the officer hurried from his seat and opened the back driver's side door. When the officer grabbed the boy from the back seat of his police Tahoe, I knew almost instantly. There was a split second, though, before instantly, I guess, where I didn't know. For that split second, the officer looked like any dad grabbing his sleeping boy from the car and putting the boy's head on his shoulder to carry him inside to sleep comfortably in his own bed. For that split second, it was a sweet moment. The officer, an around 50-year-old white guy, clutched the little boy over his left shoulder gently, but with a clear purpose. The boy was small, a black child with his hair in cornrows and dressed as a typical 5 or 6-year-old dresses. He reminded me of my own 6-year-old son. The sudden, pain looked on the officer's face and the fact that the boy wasn't crying or yelling or doing anything other than appearing to be asleep made the split-second fantasy fade away fast. We hurried into the emergency room where we were met by the trauma team and hospital staff. I'm always in awe at how these emergency room doctors and nurses and staff are so able to get to working on a patient so fast. There was some sliver of hope that the boy would make it. At least, that's what we all wanted to believe. The truth, and I think we all knew it, was that this boy would never fall asleep in his own bed again. When the officer laid the boy down on the gurney and stood back upright, any wind that may have been in my sails quickly faded to nothing. His shirt said it all. Where the boy's little heart had laid so close to the officer's own heart was a mess that told us things would not end well." End quote. So, what is Congressman Clay's strategy to counter the unforgiving violence that occurs year after year in his district? Well, marching for justice for Mike Brown in Ferguson is the picture he has prominently posted on his website, so I guess that should suffice, right? Representative Emmanuel Cleaver's 5th Congressional District encompasses Kansas City, which is 29.9% black. NeighborhoodScout.com ranked Kansas City 34th on its 2016 list of 100 most dangerous cities in America with 25,000 or more people. Moreover, its crime index ranking is 4 out of 100, 100 being the safest, meaning Kansas City is only safer than 4% of American cities. One's chances of becoming a victim of either violent or property crime there are 1 in 16. Within Missouri, more than 94% of the communities have a lower crime rate than Kansas City. Additionally, Kansas City has the 23rd most dangerous neighborhood in America, Brush Creek Boulevard / Prospect Avenue, according to NeighborhoodScout.com's list of top 25 most dangerous neighborhoods in America. In 2015, Kansas City experienced 109 homicides, making it one of the deadliest years in recent history. According to KansasCity.com, September was a particularly bad month with 20 deaths, including the shooting deaths of a South Kansas City teenage mother, her 1-year-old son, and 18-year-old boyfriend. The final number of homicides in September was one short of the city's most deadly month, when 21 people were killed in August 2008. Young people between the ages of 17 and 24 were the most prevalent victims, constituting 40% of those killed, and unsurprisingly, black males constituted the largest number of homicide victims, 63%. In October 2015, police reported that at least 16 children were murdered since the previous October. Shootings killed many of the children, who ranged from 6 weeks to 16 years old, in their homes, on their neighborhood streets, or walking beside their parents. 10-year-old McCole Coco Stewart was shot in the head while watching the World Series with her family after a gunman sprayed 20 bullets into the house. Following the tragedy, her grandmother expressed to KCTV the need for more outrage about black-on-black violence. A eureka moment indeed. Quote, They are killing our kids and nobody cares about it. It's just vigils, balloons let go. Why not get out here and rally? We are having black-on-black crime, killing each other. But then, when a Caucasian kills an African-American, everybody wants to go rally. Everybody wants to go march. Why not rally? Why not march while they're killing our kids? End quote. A local pastor urged those with information to speak to the authorities. Quote, those who know what happened, those who were involved, I know some of you are in the room right now. You know who it is. You know who done it. End quote. McCole Stewart's murder is still unsolved. So, who's responsible for Black Lives Not Mattering in St. Louis and Kansas City? The answer won't shock Representatives Clay and Cleaver. They already know that it's black males, not Darren the Gentle Giant Slayer Wilson and his co-conspirators. Nonetheless, the congressman's allegiance to the hypocritical oath and black identity politics prevent honesty. Detroit, Michigan. There are two hells in Michigan. One is a tourist attraction, Hell, Michigan, and the other is Detroit. Flint, with its 71% increase in homicides from 2014 to 2015, receives an honorable mention. The 13th and 14th congressional districts have been redistricted, but still include much of Detroit, 83% black. These districts are represented by John Conyers Jr. and Brenda Lawrence, respectively. Expectedly, for the third consecutive year, Forbes magazine recognized Detroit as America's most dangerous city in cities with populations over 200,000. NeighborhoodScout.com ranked Detroit fifth on its 2016 list of top 30 U.S. cities with the highest murder rates, 25,000 or more people, and third on its 2016 list of 100 most dangerous cities in America. Moreover, its crime index ranking is 2 out of 100. 100 is the safest, meaning Detroit is only safer than 2% of American cities. One's chances of becoming a victim of either violent or property crime there are 1 in 15. Within Michigan, more than 99% of the communities have a lower crime rate than Detroit. The Motor City is also home to the 10th and 16th most dangerous U.S. neighborhoods. West Warren Ave / McKinley Street and Trumbull Street / Lincoln Street, according to NeighborhoodScout.com's top 25 most dangerous neighborhoods in America. One's chances of becoming victimized in those areas are 1 in 13 and 1 in 14, respectively. Although 7 people were killed over the 2015 Labor Day weekend, Detroit's 295 homicides in 2015 were actually an improvement from the 299 homicides in 2014, the year its police chief called upon law-abiding citizens to arm themselves against criminals. The 9th Police Precinct, located on Detroit's east side, recorded 46 homicides, the most of any precinct. An argument between two baby mamas over their shared baby daddy led to 7-year-old Chanel Berry being killed when her house was sprayed with bullets. So, who's responsible for Black Lives Not Mattering in Detroit? Detroit Police Chief James Craig knows the answer. In fact, after 47 gunshots were fired at a crowd of 400 people gathered at a Detroit basketball court, injuring 11 and killing one spectator, he accurately called them out as urban terrorists. Representatives Fudge and Beatty already know it's the urban terrorists, but their hypocritical oath and black identity politics prevent honesty. Newark and Trenton, New Jersey. Representative Donald M. Payne Jr.'s 10th congressional district includes majority black Newark, 52%, also called Brick City because of its numerous brick housing projects. Newark is New Jersey's largest city and was once known as the car theft capital of the world. It has long been one of the state's most dangerous cities and ranked 14th on NeighborhoodScouts.com's 2016 list of top 30 U.S. cities with the highest murder rates, 25,000 or more people, and 51st on its 2016 list of 100 most dangerous cities in America. Moreover, Its crime index ranking is 11 out of 100. 100 is the safest, meaning Newark is only safer than 11% of American cities. One's chances of becoming a victim of either violent or property crime there are 1 in 24. Relative to New Jersey, Newark has a crime rate that is higher than 95% of the state's cities and towns of all sizes. Brick City is also home to the 11th most dangerous U.S. neighborhood, Lincoln Street/Court Street, according to NeighborhoodScout.com's top 25 most dangerous neighborhoods in America. One's chances of becoming victimized in that area are 1 in 13. 3-year-old Ramir Tullis was standing at an intersection with his mother when he was fatally struck by a suspect's car that jumped the curb during a police chase. He died carrying his new Spider-Man book bag. His grandmother said that the area was, quote, real bad, end quote, and very prone to car theft and carjackings. In 2015, Newark saw a surge in violence, including 5 killings over 2 days in August. Those slayings prompted city officials to take 115 police officers off desk duty and send them out to patrol the city streets. So, who's responsible for Black lives not mattering in Newark? The answer won't shock Democrat Representative Payne. He already knows that it is Black males, but the hypocritical oath and Black identity politics prevent honesty. Not to be outdone by its bigger sibling, New Jersey's capital city of Trenton, 52% Black, which falls into Representative Bonnie Watson Coleman's 12th congressional district, ranked 9th on Neighborhood Scout's 2016 list of top 30 American cities with the highest murder rate, 25,000 or more people. Additionally, Trenton placed 49th on its 2016 list of 100 most dangerous cities in America. Moreover, its crime index ranking is 15th out of 100. 100 is the safest, which means that it's only safer than 15% of American cities. The chances of becoming a victim of either violent or property crime in Trenton are 1 in 28. Relative to New Jersey, Trenton has a crime rate that is higher than 91% of the state's cities and towns of all sizes. In 2015, Trenton's murder rate was more than twice that of major U.S. cities such as Philadelphia and Chicago. Also, its practice of urban omerta remained consistent with other larger and smaller inner cities. Trenton's East Ward Councilman, Verlina Reynolds Jackson, acknowledged the self-inflicted crisis. Quote, "This attitude of not snitching is really what's hurting us. People know who commits these crimes, and we have a plethora of ways for citizens to provide anonymous tips. The best thing we can do is report the violence," end quote. So who's responsible for Black Lives Not Mattering in Trenton? The answer won't shock Democrat Representative Watson. She already knows that it is Black males. But the hypocritical oath and Black identity politics prevent honesty. Chicago, Illinois. Representative Bobby L. Rush's 1st Congressional District includes much of the South Side of Chicago and once had the highest percentage of African-American residents of any congressional district in the nation until it was redistricted in 2013. Presently, the district maintains a 51.3% Black majority. Representative Robin Kelly's 2nd congressional district is predominantly Black, 55.5%, and includes sections of Chicago. Representative Danny K. Davis's 7th congressional district also has a Black majority, 54.6%, and includes parts of Chicago. Interestingly, Blacks make up only a quarter of Chicago's populace, yet these three CBC members' districts are majority Black. Even so, Chicago consistently has enough murder to cover all their districts. The nation's third largest city recorded 51 homicides in January 2016. The highest toll for the month since at least 2000, and 241 shooting incidents, more than double the 119 incidents recorded in January 2015. By 2015's end, the 468 homicides were a 12.5% increase, and 2,900 shootings jumped 13% than the prior year. NeighborhoodScout.com reports that the chances of becoming a victim of either violent or property crime in Chicago are 1 in 25. Relative to Illinois, Chicago has a crime rate that is higher than 94% of the state's cities and towns of all sizes. Furthermore, it possesses the 24th most dangerous American neighborhood, South Pulaski Road / West Adams Street, as listed on NeighborhoodScout.com's top 25 most dangerous neighborhoods in America. One's chances of being victimized in that area are 1 in 17. In this diverse city, where blacks, whites, and Latinos each roughly represent a third of the population, only one group consistently represents the die in diversity. So, who's responsible for Black Lives Not Mattering in Chicago? The answer won't shock Representatives Rush, Davis, and Kelly. They already know that it's not racist police, but black males. Nonetheless, the hypocritical oath and black identity politics prevent honesty. Actually, Representative Kelly has already answered the question about the cause of violence in her 2014 report. And naturally, she blames guns and not violent people with guns. In her 2014 report, Gun Violence in America, she focused on blacks who died by guns and noted that blacks accounted for 55% of the national gun murder victims. Quote, "If New Orleans were a country, it would be the second deadliest nation in the world, with a gun murder rate of 62.1 per 100,000 citizens. Detroit's murder rate mirrors El Salvador," the report said. "Chicago is a carbon copy of Guyana. Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, has a higher gun homicide rate than Brazil, a nation that has long experienced high crime rates stemming from narcotics trafficking and other violent gang activity." End quote. Calling it gun violence is as asinine as calling it bullet violence. Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Representative Gwen Moore's 4th Congressional District encompasses the majority black city of Milwaukee, 40%. For several years, Milwaukee ranked among the 10 most dangerous large cities in the United States. In fact, Forbes magazine recognized Milwaukee as America's 6th most dangerous city in 2015, with populations over 200,000. NeighborhoodScout.com ranked Milwaukee 15th on its 2016 list of 100 most dangerous cities in America, with 25,000 or more people. Moreover, its crime index ranking is 3 out of 100, 100 being the safest, which means it's only safer than 3% of America's cities. One's chances of becoming a victim of either violent or property crime there are 1 in 16. Within Wisconsin, more than 98% of the communities have a lower crime rate than Milwaukee. Furthermore, it possesses the 18th most dangerous American neighborhood, West Clyburn Street / North 27th Street, as listed on NeighborhoodScout.com's top 25 most dangerous neighborhoods in America. One's chances of being victimized in that area are 1 in 14. In 2015, Milwaukee recorded 145 homicides, not including 6 fatal shootings that were ruled self-defense, or the death of a man who suffered heart failure after a robbery. According to the Journal Sentinel, Milwaukee's 2015 homicide tally was almost a 69% increase from 2014. Additionally, this year-to-year growth was higher than the headline-grabbing spikes of violence reported in Baltimore, St. Louis, and Washington, D.C. Milwaukee's police chief, Edward Flynn, cited a few factors for the city's mounting homicide toll, including a subculture within the city that affirms the use of deadly violence to achieve status. In parts of Milwaukee, the sound of gunfire is so commonplace that about 80% of gunshots detected by ShotSpotter sensors, an expensive technology system designed to detect and pinpoint gunfire leading to quicker police response, aren't even called into police by residents, Flynn said. In 2014, Chief Flynn became a notable national figure when he ranted, in part, and I quote, "The greatest racial disparity in the city of Milwaukee is getting shot and killed. Hello, 80% of my homicide victims every year are African American. 80% of our aggravated assault victims are African American. 80% of our shooting victims who survived their shooting are African American, end quote. The rant was in response to armchair activists attacking the police chief and department for a white officer killing a black male while ignoring the killing of a 5-year-old girl shot in a drive-by shooting while sitting indoors on her grandfather's lap. 2 months later, 13-month-old baby Bill Tile was shot and killed while playing with Legos on the floor. Darmaquay Cohill, a drug-dealing urban terrorist, whose first name, characteristically, reads like a handful of random letters grabbed from a Scrabble pouch, fired 41 shots at the wrong house in a dispute with another drug-dealing urban terrorist. Even so, the armchair activist's vitriol remained reserved for Milwaukee's finest. In 2016, 9-year-old Zalaia Jenkins approached officers on foot patrol in her neighborhood and asked why they were there. The officers replied that they walked the neighborhood to help keep it safe. The inquisitive 9-year-old then asked if they could keep her safe. Approximately a week later, little Zalaia was shot while watching television when a bullet from a shootout between urban terrorists pierced the wall of her home. More than 40 shell casings were recovered from the crime scene. Sadly, that question was answered tonight, Chief Flynn said after Lele, as she was affectionately called, was shot. Tragically, this innocent girl, who also jumped rope with one of the officers a week earlier, died from her head wound a day before her 10th birthday. So, who's responsible for Black Lives Not Mattering in Milwaukee? The answer won't shock Democrat Representative Moore. She already knows that it's not racist cops, but black males. Nonetheless, the hypocritical oath and black identity politics prevent honesty. New Orleans and Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Representative Cedric Richmond's 2nd Congressional District contains nearly all of the majority black city of New Orleans, 60%, and stretches west and north to the majority black city of Baton Rouge, 54%. The Baton Rouge area was picked up because of redistricting in 2010. NeighborhoodScout.com ranked New Orleans 7th on its 2016 list of top 30 U.S. cities with the highest murder rates, with 25,000 or more people, and 12th on its 2016 list of 100 most dangerous cities in America. Moreover, its crime index ranking is 5 out of 100. 100 is the safest, which means it's only safer than 5% of American cities. One's chances of becoming a victim of either violent or property crime there are 1 in 19. Relative to Louisiana, New Orleans has a crime rate that is higher than 86% of the state's cities and towns of all sizes. Following the murder of a pregnant woman and her husband just days before the delivery date while sitting in their car, NOLA.com wrote, "New Orleans violence claims men, women, children, even babies in utero." New Orleans, a city of about 380,000, also known as the Big Easy, easily maintains a per capita murder rate that's one of the highest in the country. Since 2010, almost 1,000 people have been murdered there. Its 2015 homicide count eclipsed that of 2014 and included a deadly stretch of 7 murders within an 8-day span. The city's festive vibe is constantly threatened by a far-reaching vibe of violence. In fact, Leon Canizero, Orleans Parish District Attorney, determined that the city was being dominated by, quote, urban terrorists, end quote, and implored Governor Bobby Jindal to deploy state troopers. Evidently, the New Orleans Police Department, like many other police departments, isn't equipped to handle urban terrorism. Baton Rouge has also secured a spot on Neighborhood Scout's top 30 American cities with the highest murder rate, with 25,000 or more people. It is number 29. And one's chances of becoming a victim of either violent or property crime there are 1 in 18. Within Louisiana, more than 89% of the communities have a lower crime rate than Baton Rouge. Moreover, its crime index ranking is 5 out of 100. 100 is the safest, which means it's only safer than 5% of American cities. 50% of 2015's homicide victims were black males aged 15 to 35. Its homicides rose In 2015, while the police clearance rate was an abysmal 45%. So, who's responsible for Black Lives Not Mattering in New Orleans and Baton Rouge? The answer won't shock Democrat Representative Richmond. He already knows that it's not racist cops, but black males. Nonetheless, the hypocritical oath and black identity politics prevent honesty. Indianapolis, Indiana. Representative Andre Carson's 7th congressional district encompasses Indianapolis, which was 2015's 10th most dangerous city with a populace over 200,000, according to Forbes.com. Its 2015 murder rate for every 100,000 residents was even higher than Chicago's murder rate for every 100,000 residents. Thus, NeighborhoodScout.com ranked Indianapolis 11th on its 2016 list of 100 most dangerous cities in America with 25,000 or more people. Moreover, Indy's 2015 crime index ranking was 3 out of 100, 100 being the safest, which means that it's considered safer than only 3% of American cities. One's chances of becoming a victim of either violent or property crime there are 1 in 16. Relative to Indiana, Indianapolis has a crime rate that is higher than 99% of the state's cities and towns of all sizes. After 2015 became its deadliest year, IndyStar.com called Indy a war zone, and one of those casualties was 10-year-old Deshaun Swanson, who was fatally shot while attending a memorial service with his mother and 11-year-old brother. The family was paying their final respects to an elderly woman when shots rang out. Three other people were hurt in the shooting, and Swanson died later that night in the hospital. Less than a year after Deshaun's death, residents of this crime-plagued neighborhood held a safety and rally march to celebrate 200 days without a homicide. In actuality, the murder-free milestone was more of a testament than an achievement. Even so, I applaud the hostages for finally fighting their captors. So, who's responsible for Black Lives Not Mattering in Indianapolis? The answer won't shock Democrat Representative Carson. He already knows that it's not racist cops, but black males. Nonetheless, the hypocritical oath and black identity politics prevent honesty. Birmingham, Alabama. Representative Terry A. Sewell's 7th congressional district encompasses supermajority black, 73% Birmingham. Forbes lists Birmingham as the 5th most dangerous American city in 2015, with populations over 200,000. NeighborhoodScout.com ranked Birmingham 25th on its 2015 list of top 30 U.S. cities with the highest murder rates, with 25,000 or more people, and 12th on its 2016 list of 100 most dangerous cities in America. Moreover, Birmingham's crime index ranking is 1 out of 100, 100 being the safest, which means it is considered safer than only 1% of American cities. One's chances of becoming a victim of either violent or property crime there are 1 in 12. Relative to Alabama, Birmingham has a crime rate that is higher than 98% of the state's cities and towns of all sizes. Birmingham's 2015 homicide count dramatically increased 55% from 2014, making 2015 the city's deadliest year since 2008. Frustrated with Birmingham's violence and the black clergy's apathy, Reverend Michael Jordan vented to AL.com. Quote, "Our young black men are dying. I think it gets too much attention when a white policeman kills a black male, but it gets no attention when it's black-on-black murders," end quote. Consequently, the concerned reverend attempted to rally black pastors and leaders by posting stark messages on his church's marquee. One side of the marquee read, quote, "Lord, please stop blacks from killing blacks," end quote, while the flip side read, quote, "Young black males must respect authority," end quote. Reverend Jordan stated that he didn't receive one call from black pastors or leaders. So, who's responsible for Black Lives Not Mattering in Birmingham? The answer won't shock Democratic Rep. Sewell. She already knows that it's not the ghost of Bull Connor or racist cops, but black males. Nonetheless, the hypocritical oath and black identity politics prevent honesty. Philadelphia, PA. Representative Shaka Fatah's 2nd Congressional District, which he has represented since 1995, includes much of majority black, 43%, Philadelphia. Affectionately called the City of Brotherly Love, the brotherly love nowadays is the kind of love that Cain showed Abel. Philadelphia was once the murder capital of America and earned the moniker Killadelphia. Presently, one's chances of becoming a victim of either violent or property crime there are 1 in 23. Relative to Pennsylvania, Philadelphia has a crime rate that is higher than 95% of the state's cities and towns of all sizes. Moreover, its crime index ranking is 10 out of 100. 100 is the safest, which means it's considered safer than only 10% of American cities. Furthermore, it possesses the 25th most dangerous American neighborhood, North 15th Street / West Dolphin Street, as listed on NeighborhoodScout.com's top 25 most dangerous neighborhoods in America. One's chances of being victimized in that area are 1 in 17. In this city, where one zip code can predict one's life expectancy, 11-year-old Christian O'Hara expressed to Philly.com that he thinks endlessly about bullets. Quote, the 11-year-old says that when he hears gunshots in Fairhill, North Philadelphia, he feels painful pressure in his belly. And the soulful, dark-haired boy adds, I know if a bullet hits me, it will feel worse than my stomach does. I feel stressed and scared always. It needs to stop. End quote. Only half of Philadelphia's 2015 homicides, 52%, were solved. National average is 64%. Despite the city's $20,000 reward for anyone who offers information leading to the arrest and conviction of a killer, police cite the persistent stop snitching culture as an undeniable factor for its low homicide clearance rate. 10 of the top 100 worst performing public schools in the U.S. are in Philadelphia, including Martin Luther King High, oh, the irony, Philadelphia Learning Academy, learning what? And John Bartram High, a school where daily assaults on staff caused the principal to quit. The Germantown section of Philadelphia, founded by German Quakers and Mennonites in 1683, has some of the country's best maintained historic landmarks, districts, cobblestone streets, and buildings from the colonial era. Many of these structures, including the home where George Washington stayed to escape yellow fever, remain open to the public. Germantown is also the birthplace of America's anti-slavery movement and home to the first bank of the United States. But what does all this wonderful Germantown history mean to the average Germantown citizen? Nothing. Today's Germantown is a shadow of its former self and has a victimization rate that rivals small cities. It desperately needs the German Quakers and Mennonites to return. History remembers that on October 4th, 1777, the colonials attacked British units that were housed in Germantown, and the Battle of Germantown ensued. Understandably, history won't remember the modern-day battle that's occurring in Germantown because it's not against the Redcoats. It's against the Hoodies. The present-day colonials should yell, "The Hoodies are coming! The Hoodies are coming!" So, who's responsible for Black Lives Not Mattering in Philly? The answer won't shock Representative Fatah. He already knows that it's not racist cops, but black males. Nonetheless, the hypocritical oath and black identity politics prevent honesty. However, this career politician is presently focused on his own troubles over those related to his constituency. He's currently facing a 29-count indictment for participation in a racketeering conspiracy and other crimes, including bribery, conspiracy to commit mail, wire, and honest services fraud, and multiple counts of mail fraud, falsification of records, bank fraud, making false statements to a financial institution, and money laundering. His son, Shaka Fatah Jr., known as Chip, was recently found guilty on 22 of 23 counts of tax and bank fraud and sentenced to 5 years in prison. Did the apple fall far from the tree?